concentrate. I get pulled behind my eyes into some place where I can't really differentiate between thoughts and feelings, and there's no clear object, but I know there's a lot going on still. So it's easy to lose awareness there because there's no clear objects. It's a fault.
ก็ตอนนี้เมสซี่เนี่ยอายุสั้นอยู่แล้วเมสซี่เนี่ยอายุสั้นเนี่ยตัวดีอ่ะดีเมสซี่อนาคตเนี่ยมันยอดเตะเลยไอ้มาเมสซี่ดีเนี่ยอตรีเวเมสซี่มาเล่นชื่อเนี่ยอายุพี่เนี่ยมันก็ตีแบบพี่เนี่ยมันไม่ตีเลยแต่แม้ดีแล้วลุ่นเลยเลยตัวเราโฟกัสเนี่ยอามาเมียนุ่งอามาเมียนุ่งแบบว่าเมียนุ่งอาเทนายเมียนุ่งมาตัวเต้นเต้นเพี้ยนเพี้ยนมาอืมตัวรู้สั้นจีใครมาแล้วไม่บอก
Can
you feel
your foot? Yeah. Are you using your eyes?
A little bit. My mental eye. But mental eye, I see. Mental eye, I don't know.
But your physical eye?
No.
Because you get the tension before because you're actually using your physical eyes.
No, no. I think it's the mental eye that's causing the tension.
So can you decrease how much you use it and still know the foot?
Oh, trauma.
I can try, yeah, but it doesn't. I can't make it go away completely.
Go what? Go away the mental eye.
And the awareness of the eye.
Maybe you're just aware of the awareness. But why does it cause tension? You're focusing a lot.
Well, I don't know, but if I get pulled behind my eyes in this place where there's thoughts and I feel it's like behind my eyes.
Yes.
So when I try to look behind my eyes kind of maybe want to cross to look behind
me.
So that can cause tension.
Yeah, so don't do that. You can feel that space without using...
Yeah, I try, but...
So maybe don't use the word mental eye for yourself. Okay, so he said, what about can you know your back? Can you just feel it?
Yeah.
So you can sense the mind paying attention, knowing the space, knowing the place, or knowing the sensation. Does that cause tension?
Not right now.
So, do you meditate with your eyes open when you sit? Do you do it with your eyes closed or open?
Both, but the tension is often worse when I keep them open.
It's really about how much energy you're using, so because if you use too much you get tension, so you need to tune your energy, really.
Yeah.
Learn to be comfortable with knowing less but more comfortably.
Yeah, that's actually what my question was about. When I drop the effort, then I get to this place where I can't really see anything clearly and it's easy to lose awareness.
But there's a difference between the energy we use to focus and the energy we use to stay aware. So relaxing is about relaxing the greed to know an object clearly, and so on. But the effort to continue, because you know, to continue to be aware, you are aware again and again and again, right? So
So
it's not a lack of.
So it's better to be not clear.
It would be interesting. You can find out for yourself how, if you remain aware of not clear for long enough, it gets clear. So then you learn to tune the mind, you know, because you have more trust that the process of just being aware can clarify.
Can I ask? I have a kind of like a physical problem that I should be aware of, like kind of like a muscle imbalance that caused me like a knee problem and also a hamstring problem. But the thing is that, for example, when I'm walking and meditating, I'm kind of like too aware of that kind of problem. I identify too much with those sensations, like I'm okay with the sounds and the what I'm seeing, but then I'm like, oh, but that's my hamstring problem, or...
So you get worried about it.
Yeah, and maybe I don't get worried about it. Actually, I found out that there's lots of greed behind it, because I want to get rid of that problem, so... it's not so much pain, it's more like the wanting to get rid of that problem.
Do not do to mama, I think, to... Boma, she did. Who are the cook? We did not know, not know, to imbalance pinnacle to I look human and I to a low low sea she will amen. Lanshaw, you say, a mere ayo, a county of the home, where sick at the same old yap. So keep watching the mind. Yeah, the mind. Remember, he said in the sitting, if the mind has a reaction, then don't look at that object, look at the reaction.
And
it's good exercise. It's a good opportunity because it help gives us the the opportunity to watch the mind and learn how to become skillful and understand. When we keep watching the reactions in our mind, it becomes a habit, so we'll always notice reactions very quickly. Quite normal for, you've been working with this problem at home. So it's normal for the mind to, when it notices this, the same stuff will come up.
Direct conditioning.
Sort of conditioning for the mind. He says, as we keep watching these patterns of the mind, and slowly it becomes more and more clear how there's nobody there. It's all these patterns and habits and things that take place because something has set it in motion. These are the laws of nature. We think it's the mind. We believe it, but it has its own mind. and we begin to recognize this nature. So being mindful allows us to notice these things over and over and over again until it hits us that mind has developed its own pattern again. So it's good. Just our work is to be aware.
directly related to the practice, but at nights I keep having very, very intense dreams.
Are they nightmares?
Both nightmares and pleasant dreams.
Okay.
And I've had this before in other retreats as well.
Yeah.
And I've actually never got an answer what was happening. What's going on. So
mm-hmm.
I was just wondering.
Yeah, every night.
Almost every night, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it's a common night.
Nightmare,
yeah. And what a calm or so, no music will appear nightmare. So everybody dreams at night. That's normal. But some of us don't know. That's all. The dreams that we usually remember are the ones that that take place just before we wake up. Those are the ones that we might remember. But on retreat, depending on the yogi's personality, because you're aware all the time, you also become more aware of our dreams. But depending on the yogi's personality, some yogis have very intense dreams. So some yogis often report that on retreat they have, some have nightmares all the time. But the type of dreams we have just depends on our, you know, our personalities and our lives. Yeah.
You know.
It's not a problem.
In my time, you see that, yeah.
Because when you wake up, the dream is no more. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Just another figment of the mind's imagination.
Yes, I have this. Sometimes I feel that it's like there's this really balanced awareness, but it's just like maybe two things at the same time, but I can be like relaxed and just aware of what's going on. But then the moment I remember that I am meditating, then the labeling voice is coming out that says, "You are hearing. You are seeing. This is seeing. This is a thought. Now you are thinking." And it's like, well, should I just like be aware of this labeling voice, or would there be a way to maybe a little bit reduce this, because it gets really busy.
Labeling is just another thought, right? It's just another thought. It's actually quite normal for our mind to label what it knows. If we just sort of like brush it aside, if we just think of it as normal, you know, it comes sometimes. Sometimes we notice it, sometimes we don't notice it, but it's always there. It's telling us what we know. But if we don't like it, then it seems to persist because of the disliking of it. Then we notice it more because we don't want it to be there. Yeah, it's really natural for the mind to always, you know, when we're being aware, even if you don't remember you're meditating, if every time we're aware and if we want to remember or know clearly what we know, the mind is softly telling us. The mind always, like even when you drive a car and you see number plates and all, your mind reads them automatically. You know, it's just like that.
So
the moment we see something and the mind knows what it is, the mind will speak. So this is perception at work. You know, perception does several kinds of work. It remembers, it identifies, it gives names, so and that's there all the time in the mind. It's one of the functions of the mind that's always there. If you see a stranger and you see the stranger again tomorrow, will you remember that you've seen this person before?
So
if, you know, if it's somebody that, you know, whose face sort of got our attention a little bit, the mind will have remembered it.
Our
mind works so fast. We just look at a person and, you know, it's sort of remembered already whether the person has brown hair, red hair, you know, man, woman, so on.
It's normal function.
Yeah. It's okay. If you just remember that this is also, if you, you know, all we need to understand is that this is just another mind at work.
Information ni ma ya tha de lu ga pin pa ga yau yau lu pa na lu nu lai ya so ko
some people when they hear their mind talking to them, they think somebody else is talking to them. That can become a problem, because then when that's when you know it becomes a hallucination, right? So when we don't understand the mind is just the mind, then we attribute it to strange things. It can be quite frightening, so it's something that's useful to know. When we know that this is just nature, this is the mind,
just a thought.
It's a thought. We can, you know, then we don't have to attribute it to somebody else.
Concentration practice, look at the concentration that I call it, because yan tin sha la.
Yeah. And it's particularly, this is this information is important for people who are very high concentration, because concentration magnifies and makes things very clear in the mind. So when these people who have very high concentration experience things like, you know, noticing the mind is talking or images in the mind, sometimes they feel like they're actually in the scene, you know, in the story. They can identify with the story they're in, or, you know, the sounds sound really real, like they're coming from outside and somebody's talking to them. And then if they don't have this information, they believe it. And then they just freak out.
Concentration archaeology, the mind door, young kinshala.
Yeah.
But door you door, not more.
With concentration, the sensing of the mind is very close. And if you don't know that this is the mind, they can't differentiate mind from what they know. You know, because all these images and sounds are in the mind, but they think that it's coming from outside because it feels so real because of the concentration.
There's no problem.
So it's okay if the mind tells you what you're knowing. Just know that thought too. So maybe look at the dislike in mind. Yeah, take care of the... If you find that your mind finds it irritating, the irritation, you need to watch that. Because so long as the irritation is there, that loud...
More noise.
Yeah, it'll just be worse and worse. Yeah, it'll talk more to you. Because... it'll seem to talk more.
Okay.
I don't have a question, but I'll just
drop
it. Okay. I've been noticing that there's a lot of thoughts of greed of once. I noticed that the things that I felt when it comes to aversion, that it usually comes back to something that I that's connected to greed.
Yeah. Lobha de man min ne. Do da phi ne lobha de khu jaw ma de ta.
Sat. Okay.
And then today when we started the yogi job, I noticed that I was more that my stress, like that was something that increased, because I went into a highway of thoughts. So it was like several different thoughts happening at the same time, because usually I walk around and just I can sense in my own time in
yeah.
a sense that there it was more intense.
Yeah.
With several different thoughts.
And there are actually there is a super highway happening in the mind. We're just not usually aware of it.
You know,
I've
got a boy I'm ready to go. Yeah,
most of the time we're like sort of on the surface of the mind, you know, surface of the ocean. But when you go into the depth, there's so much life there.
คนเราดีได้แล้วเราว่าตัวเราจะสั่นนี่ได้ดีได้ว่าอธิกตัดที่กูอ่ะถูก
Yeah, it's great, you know, noticing what comes up in the mind a lot, like the greed, and noticing the connection that it has to whenever we have aversion. You know, as strong as the greed is, that's how the strong, the heart, that's how strong the aversion will be. Reflection.
What do you mean by that?
Like if you want something, like, how do you define strength? So if you want something like this much, then when you can't get it, the
opposite people
yeah, the amount of aversion you have towards it, you know, whether it's irritation or grief or anger, whatever, will be as strong. So our anger is always, our irritation is always a gauge of how much we want the other one. So it's good to notice our greed because that keeps it in check, knowing that it's there. Because when we don't know, greed can go up, you know, can grow. And so knowing greed helps to temper it. Otherwise, when greed grows without our knowledge, then So he gives this example of, you know, when we live together with people and we don't notice how much we get attached to them. How in little ways we begin to take their presence for granted, their, you know, all these little ways that we attach, we feel comfortable with these experiences of being with the person. And if somebody, and if that person dies suddenly, the amount of grief we have is a... when we get separated from that, you know, the amount of reaction we have to that is a reflection of how much we have grown that attachment. Yeah, and it's the same with things, right? You know, we lose a bag and how upset do we feel, you know, or a computer, or, you know, things like that. How many things are we attached to? How many people? There are two glasses. One is expensive. We were told it's durable. It doesn't break easily. And we bought it because, you know, it looks good and it's durable. Another one is cheap. It breaks easily. But not worth much. And if both those glasses break, this is which one will we feel more for?
Blue tail.
What do you think?
The one that's more expensive.
Yeah, positive. And why?
Because we think we put more value.
And we think that we paid more, less, it's going to serve us more. We think it's going to last longer, you know. The other one is going to be impermanent, probably.
We
expect it to go, but the other one we don't expect it to go. So expected.
Good, I mean, good the ball how would be Brasilia Lama.
So these invisible, subtle ideas in the mind that take root. He says somebody we love, we do we want them to hang around or go quickly? We don't need to answer that question, we already know. Yeah, so he says we have to be prepared that, you know, we are attached, but we have to be prepared that we will suffer. You already can see the connection between greed and aversion, but you know, loba, greed, is everything, right? From a small attachment to large attachment, and dosa is everything from small irritation to grief and fear and anger. Now it sounds funny, but when we experience things, when we experience loss, sometimes it can be devastating. So when we understand the mind, or we know, he says we can be prepared, at the very least be aware of the attachments and all, and maybe the mind will learn something.
Asceticism,
love is never the problem. It's not the love that's the problem. We can love as much as we want. It's the attachment that gives us the
problems.
Love is a positive quality of mind. You know, it's a skillful quality of mind, and as much love as we can give and have, the mind is brightened, you know. But attachment, that's a
kettle of fish. Why is it
attachment is like a time bomb for the mind.
So they
So we always recognize the whether a mind is skillful or not by its eventual effects. You know, when it causes pain and suffering and so on, we know that was an unskillful mental quality
to have.
So we meditate so that we first we recognize all these things that work in the mind, and then as we keep being aware of them, we understand them better. And when we understand them, we are not so affected by them, not blindly affected by them, which is what makes us suffer more. Right? When we are conscious, it's just we have more choice. There's so much depression in the world, and often it's just depression is the state of frustration of desires. You know, there's so many things that the person finds unsatisfactory or worthless. Or and when, yeah.
Can I ask one question on that? I live in two cultures, so in one of the cultures, we learn like very from a very early age that serving is something very important,
yeah,
especially as a woman.
Yeah.
And I think I've noticed a lot in my family, like the effect of that when it goes to the extreme, where it has led to depression or it has led to resentment.
Yeah.
And so my question is, like, where do you find like the balance in those very good qualities in a society that kind of, do you understand
that question? Yeah. Tu wa kalala pite di tu wa di bona nga manele di tama tu apa tu kalala terima tu wa ko we are with sao tu wa ko perlu komle kau ne huwa lu yusa kau ne ba khole kudu lo lo yusa le Dabemere, tu mienere, edi, wea wisao, o, aswanda payao yin, o, tu kubi, meimari, tu, tu, o, amie, meimari, ya.
Lopi, ya.
Lopi, niara, dame, jalai, ho, บางอย่างเลยส่วนจะคันนี้จะช่วยดูเลยอ่ะมาคันนี้สิเดี๋ยวที่เราจะคันนี้
รู้ใช่ไหมลูกเนี่ยจะแบบจะเหงา
เออปุ๊บลูกแบลนซ์ชามเลย
ก็จะไอ้ตัวสิ่งกูชิมเนี่ยลูกเดียวใช่ไหมทุกคนจะรู้ไอ้มันใช่เนี่ยสิ่งกูแค่ไหนก็ได้
นั่นก็คือ motivation เลยที่อ่ะ
ที่อ่ะมันภาษาเนี่ยลูกเนี่ยโอ้ที่อ่ะ
แล้วก็ช้อยส์ไม่ใช่เลยพอมาเลยมุดีเลยเขาจะมาละแต่คันนี
้เอา
แต่คันนี้ตัวรู้มาอยู่ในเชมูไม่ใช่ลูกคนลูกอ่ะ
เออตัวจะช่วยกิจการเนี่ยมายาวส่วนสิ่งกูเปลี่ยนละ
เออส
ิ่
งกู
เพราะเห็นดันที่ว่าก็ปุ๋ยหรือผิดแล้ว
Yeah. So there's this, so when doing service as well, we should always be checking our mind, because there's two things, like in what you've mentioned, there is the motivation for service, and there is whether we have a choice or not to do service, right? And sometimes our motivations backfire on us. So maybe we want acknowledgement and stuff like that, and that could backfire on us.Like if we don't get it, we get frustrated. The other one is choice, if we don't have a choice. Sadhu says as we watch ourselves do the service, and if we find, he says especially if somebody doesn't want to do it, but has no choice but to do it, he says that can build a lot of resentment. And what's really causing the pain is not the fact that there's no choice, it's the fact that the person doesn't like it. Right? Yeah, so if the person can watchTheir mind is able to, you know, is able to develop the skill, you know, that they can understand that what causes pain is the aversion they're having. So then they're able to drop the aversion, or the mind is willing to give up the aversion because they recognize how aversion is causing them so much pain. Then they're relieved of that.
ดีแต่ไอ้ I'm present ask for my new มาปวามีสิบ
yeah so
กูดูสิบแบบปวามในนั้นตัดตัด
so when you know when somebody doesn't know their mind they don't know that they first it's a little bit of aversion and they don't notice it what happens is when we don't notice what's happening in the mind it grows especially when it's happening on a daily basis it just keeps growing until when we notice it it's a huge amount of resentment that's really hard to deal with he saysAt the very least, if we're not able to develop the wholesome side of it, which is, you know, maybe feeling, you know, happy that we are able to do this or believing that, you know, there is a reward to it, whatever it is. If we're not able to bring up the wholesome qualities that this activity is supposed to bring, he says we should at least be really aware that the unwholesome doesn't grow in the mind.
ก็ตนาซิกูซิกูมันตีวูซิกไอ้เจ้ามันตีวูบาเจ้าเจ้าบ่รู้ผิดเด้อซะมันตีวูตาโลไม่เอามาตาไหนมาปวาเนาะปวาไปเอาโดผัดไปวะ
when we don't understand the mind yeah, so then when we're not watching the mind we don't understand how it works then stuff in the mind just it has its own mind it does what it does that's the law of the mind you know delusion will do its work and if there's resentment it'll just keep growing you know if we don't attend to itYeah, and if we can keep the negatives low, it provides the opportunity also for the positives to grow.
That's why, I don't dare at all.
That's why we must meditate.
But Lulio Chia Bhamiya, next Khaniya, Lulio Chia Bhamiya, Lulio Chia
Bhamiya. When Sarah looks atthe human race. He says, he feels like when we're not aware, we are suffering without choice. You know, it's like being tortured, he said, because we don't know what's really affecting us and we fight, you know, and we suffer so much. He says he went through that too. He went through a lot of that.He says not knowing what's right, not knowing what's true, you know, what's truly the problem, not knowing it can be a big... And we don't know what is the cause, what is the actual cause, what's the actual effect, you know, what's... Because everything can be shamed, you know, there can be good and bad motivations. in everything, mixed sort of feelings and motivations. And if we can't read out, can't tell clearly what is true and what's not true for the mind, he says that that can cause a lot of problems. He says so it's so important for us. He says to live a life, to be a person, you know, where you live a meaningful life, it means you not only are able to keep the mind positive or at least at an even keel, and also to feel that life is fulfilling and meaningful. He says that takes a lot of understanding, and it's only when the mind understands deeply that the mind is able to find all these, you know, find meaning and fulfillment and balance in the way they live life. You've heard of the Four Noble Truths, yeah, the Buddha talked about. So he talked about dukkha, which I won't translate as suffering, because I don't think it quite says it. But there's, you know, the cause of dukkha, and then there is...
Cause of dukkha, the way to free from the dukkha.
There's the end of dukkha.
End of the dukkha.
And then there is... and then there is a way leading to the end of dukkha.
The first one is dukkha.
A cause for dukkha. There is a way leading to the end of dukkha, and there is the end of dukkha.
Yes.
If we want to be the best possible that we can be, he says, we can't achieve that without really knowing our mind. He says, we all want to be happy, but we suffer because we don't truly understand the mind. So we learn to meditate to get the tools for watching ourselves and then learning about
ourselves.
So long as we're human, you know, at least we have this opportunity. But if we don't know our minds, we can't be free of the suffering that the mind can cause us. No matter where we are. He says we use the word life, but when we think of our lives are always a representation of the quality
life
of our minds.
Say a reflection.
Our life is a reflection of our minds. You know, so we call someone good-hearted, it's just a reflection of what we see of their mind. You know, or if you think someone is evil, it's what we think of their mind.
Okay, so continue, what's the mind?
I'm thinking about attachment as a cause for suffering. But I'm perplexed by the paradox in being human. Intimacy breeds attachment, literally physical attachment. Hormones are released between two lovers that form connection that breeds attachment. A woman has a child and
the
chemicals are released that inspire attachment. And we are here saying that attachment is a cause of suffering when being human naturally is a cycle of
suffering,
being attached, and therefore suffering. So I have no question, but this is my what do I do with this?
ตัวเนี่ยโหงั้นเนี่ยทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะทุซะท chemical is like tweet that out ma. As well as PCB. Kalimu go hormone tweet that kaleo tweet a bro who chiji shuji na say the pi on hormone and la red as well pisia pilami. Oh, yeah, Jamie Master Sangi, so in there, a hormone interpreting of you, a sweat pit pole to
up
in it.
The
Bower, the Bower. I don't know if you're a Lupin daddy, Pissy Bow, to what top up be that pin in it, damn it. Damn it, D have pin, don't cry out this rope, but Lucy's hamlet of whom. I mean, that is our value.
I'm a pit up, but a man of your life. And the target she did. I don't have a man. I don't do that. Mean, can't you come? Can't you let me move? Never mind.
So we come back to the noble truths, right? So the first noble truth is that there is dukkha. And this is the truth. So, yeah, regardless of, you know, maybe because of that, you know, the whole human condition is. You know, is geared towards promoting attachment, you know, as you suggest. But there is also the truth that if we understand the cause of the dukkha, we can find the way. There is also a way. The causes, the conditions that lead to the end of dukkha. I mean, just as there are causes to dukkha, there are causes to the end of dukkha. Then we can choose to end dukkha. It's just our choice which one we want to do.
May I ask, it sounds simple when you put it that way. It's a way to kind of end of suffering or unsatisfaction. How do you get there? I mean, it's one thing to say it, but how to realize it?
Balolo yao bale. Mega balolo.
Balolo niya mega wo. Apo ato niya ni?
It is said that the way to the end of dukkha is the practice of meditation, is awareness and wisdom. So.
Noble Eightfold Path,
the Noble Eightfold Path. The Noble Eightfold Path is the Magga, right? It's, Magga means way, right?
Right means right thoughts, right neighborhood, right chikuga, nanyama.
So you have the Eightfold Path, which is it starts with right view and right thought. And
right neighborhood, right action, right speech.
Right, you have the
right awareness, right samadhi, and right effort.
Mm-hmm. So. We're trying to do the last two, and then hopefully the three in between as well. So.
Yeah, but I guess it takes a lot of practice and effort
Yes, nothing comes for free.
Just another thought.
And the more valuable something is, the more you have to pay for it. You have to pay its value back to get it.
If it's
cheap, then you get something cheap.
Suffering,
we don't have to pay for suffering.
Automatically,
we get it easily. It's just there.
If peaceful, I can.
Yeah.
It's difficult
happiness,
to get
peacefulness. Now you can
difficult to get happiness, peace, wisdom. That seems to be our don't have to worry about getting some trouble.
No.
He says, if it's ting, it's down. He says, it's like, it's just an automatic reaction. You know, almost all our instinctive stuff, you know, is designed to bring some dukkha to us. He says, we see something, it's so easy to get attached to it or not like it. We hear something, it's so easy to think, oh, this is nice, or oh, this is so difficult to remain neutral. In fact, we don't even want to remain neutral. It feels like it's boring.
Hmm.
We want to have all this emotion and sensation. We don't need to do anything to like and dislike.
Neutral pill, middle way, the neutral pill, yellow one.
To be, but to stay neutral, he says, we have to work very hard to stay on
neutral.
We have to pay.
I have a thought here, because the circumstances around us also has a big impact on or ability to be happy, I guess, or it might be easier under certain circumstances than under other ones.
But we want to train the mind not to have to suffer because of circumstances.
No, of course, but still it might be.
You make me angry, right?
He says, sometimes somebody says something to us and we, our thought is, this person made me angry. This person is so irritating. Isn't that what we say? This person is irritating. infuriating, you know? But he says, nobody can infuriate us. Nobody can irritate us. If indeed other people could affect us so easily that way,
everybody,
then we're lost, you know? We're just like slaves to every external thing. We have no choice at all in the matter. So what we notice of our experience is that there are circumstances, there are people, and then we have feelings. Those are the most obvious to us. And we make this conclusion that the circumstance and the people make us feel what we feel. He says, but we've lost this whole part of the picture which we don't notice, which is what happens in the mind.
Mm.
How we use our minds and how we think, our ideas, our beliefs, our values, all these contribute to the judgment we have about our circumstances. And if we didn't have that, if we could see that, we could choose to not have that.
Mm.
Then nothing would affect us like that. We wouldn't be helpless. So if you are happy, you are responsible for your happiness. But if you are unhappy, you are also solely responsible for your unhappiness. You might say that circumstances served as one of the triggers for what came up in the mind, but ultimately the total responsibility for what the mind feels belongs to the mind itself. It's because of how the mind uses. There are so many wealthy people who are deeply depressed.
But because I think under very difficult circumstances you might have to be an expert in mindfulness, while under pretty good circumstances, well, you can do quite good if you average in mindfulness.
That's right, but we are responsible again. So just pray. If the mindfulness is not expert enough, not to get into very difficult.
Thank you.
Yes?
I was thinking about being mindful and meditation in a social situation, because it feels kind of difficult, because like in here in retreat and silent retreat, the circumstances are quite easy for being mindful. But when I go back to the world in my life, there's lots of stuff happening, and especially when speaking with people, it's like you have to be responsive and quick, and it feels like you have to do two jobs at the time.
Right.
If you do like being aware of your thoughts and mind and everything, and still like responding and communicating.
So when you do two, you find that you're doing two things, being mindful and trying to communicate what happens.
It's like I feel like I'm concentrating on myself, being like self-conscious in a way, and then I get slow at responding, and I feel my focus is on myself and not on the situation.
So Siyala says it's all about skill, and skill is gained from continued practice. So he says it's like martial arts, you know, at first you're just doing two moves, and then after a while you don't know when you can just use it automatically, right? Yeah. So it's the same way. So now you find it a little bit slow and deliberate, but if you keep doing it, you'll find it just slowly comes automatic. In any subjects, when we're not skillful at it yet, we're slow. You know, when you first learn to cook, when you first learn to But when we do something all the time, over and over and over again, it just becomes easier and easier and easier. Yeah, it gains momentum, in other
words.
So in every subject, Sierra says, momentum is key to becoming skillful. At first we have to use so much personal effort. I have to try to be mindful. You know, aware continuously, and we have to keep trying. But when it becomes habitual for the mind, it's sort of like you're pedaling your bicycle and you let go and it still goes.
At first you're
like, can't balance a bike, and afterwards you can do it on one wheel. You know, that sort of thing. Yeah, there are even people who can cycle off mountains, jump on. So it's just how much we practice.
I'm wondering, what are the counter forces, like when there's these five good qualities of the mind? What are the mirroring counter?
Unskillful ones.
Yeah.
Okay. Indirin abaya sanchibaba. The dear sanchibaba mira.
Mira wa.
Apamata.
The madia sanchibaba. Pianlena wa.
Pianlena.
Uriya sanchibaba pina wa. Pina. Pina mina. Tanganiya sanchibaba. Same with that. Oh, Malucha. Pinya sanchibaba.
Don't go. We see case up.
It won't.
So the opposite of wisdom is delusion.
Mm-hmm.
The opposite of virya is laziness, which we call sloth and torpor. Tinamita. The opposite of sadda, faith or confidence, is doubt. Vichikicca. The opposite of samadhi is kukusana.
Wandering,
the opposite of sati is pamada, I think, forgetting, I think.
Forget the mami.
Sati is to remember the right thing. And
could you elaborate a little bit on the concept of dukkha?
Dukkha, chamla,
shubhamla. Dukkha. Dukkha don't use it. Chamla dilu ya dukkha do. I suffering dukkha shide. Feeling dukkha shide. We be nama dukkha shide. No, tingkha dukkha shide. I don't use. So they will find out.
There's three levels of suffering. Dukkha. Three levels of dukkha. So the first level is what we know as suffering.
Suffering.
Called dukkha. Yeah, it's dukkha, double trouble. So it's when we feel suffering. We feel unpleasantness. We feel like it's not nice. Yeah, so that's dukkha, pain, that kind of. So that's the first level of dukkha. The second level of dukkha is called viparinama dukkha, which has to do with the fact that things never end. That every morning you wake up, you have to brush your teeth. Every day you have to bathe. Everything has to be fulfilled over and over again. Nothing lasts. You know, everything has to be repeated, refreshed, including our awareness. And then the last one is sankhara dukkha. Sankhara dukkha is about the fundamental nature of life, which is that it is the way
changing.
It is. That it's constantly changing, it's cause and effect. It's changing because it's cause and effect. You know, they're all together. So there is a... And that's relentless too. When you eat, do you enjoy eating?
Sometimes.
Do you sometimes feel like eating is dukkha?
Sometimes.
Okay.
When we feel it's dukkha, it's when we don't feel. When we don't enjoy something, you know, there's not so much greed in it, we can see more clearly the practical aspects of it. And some of it is
no.
That there is work.
Don't call it understand. Don't call it knowledge. Knowledge is important. The freedom.
Yeah. But one thing that we must be very careful of when trying to understand dukkha is that the understanding of dukkha always sets us free. Okay, if it's wisdom, wisdom always gives us freedom.
Don't call it needy.
So if we think that something is dukkha and it starts to make us complain, we start to feel, oh, it's so worthless, you know, these things happen all the time, it's so difficult. That's already a delusion. That's anger. That's become dosa. So that's not the understanding yet. When we truly understand the nature of something, that this is so, and that makes us free, you know, feel like, all right, you know, it makes us able to let go or something like that. Then we know that we've got a wise understanding of it. But every time we feel heavy because of a thought of dukkha, that's the dosa.
That goes away. I don't have it.
Okay. So wisdom, it's only when wisdom is present in our understanding of dukkha that it actually sets us free.
Yeah.
So it's not even about trying to let go, because trying doesn't really make us let go.
Yeah.
So, I guess hypothetically, it would be that, for example, understanding dukkha and eating would be that you understand that you have to do it every day. And if you don't have greed for it, you don't really enjoy it so much, but you know you don't have a choice but to fulfill it. But this feeling free of it is that, you know, you're not attached to it anymore. So you're not burdened by, you do it because you need to, and that's all. You fulfill a function. You're neither attached to the pleasure of it, but you don't have aversion to the function of it. And that's when you're free. Know it for what it is.
I have a question about insomnia. I thought that before I was looking forward to this occasion, this retreat, but I imagine that I can sleep very easily here because I don't have stress and I don't have work to do, ordinary work, which is a little bit stressful. But in the evenings, I'm very awake and I can't sleep and my mind is working. But in daytime, I fall asleep very easily.
Okay.
But not in the evening.
That
is not night.
Good. That doesn't sound like it's a problem. Tu ha elu ma piao lu re. Nya ni chai tu ha no cha mu ra elu ma piao. Da mai nei ge chai tu elu ya le. A chain piao ma. Yeah, no problem. Then you sleep when you can. Don't sleep. Don't need to sleep when you can't. Just be aware that time. Yeah, just switch the idea that we have.
And I feel my head is very tensed. And I think it has something to do with the location of mind in my mind. I think that my mind is here,
okay,
and I try to locate it to my heart and my legs or somewhere else because
it feels so tense here.
Yes.
Kaun ma te no tu a sait ko ta cha ni a tha mo chou sa le re. Tu bang pa. Is it even when you're walking around or sitting here, or just only in sitting meditation?
Especially in sitting meditation, and when I in the evening when I try to sleep.
And number nya, eight po chou sa le ka.
Nya, eight po chou sa po ma eight.
Yeah. One thing to remember is that if you try to sleep, you won't be able to sleep. So don't try to sleep. Because you know greed causes agitation, and because you want so desperately to sleep, it's very agitated. But if your mind is agitated, how will it sleep?
Cannot sleep.
Mm-hmm. So it's when the mind is relaxed that it can sleep. So don't try to sleep at night. Yeah, because if you try to do it with this anxiety about it, so think of it as time to meditate, because he said meditation is until we fall asleep. So since you're not falling asleep, it's still just time to meditate. No worries, just
Yeah, and when you feel sleepy during the day, it's fine to go to sleep.
Well, awareness will come along like, something you choose, like,
yeah, if you just allow yourself to be simple and aware continuously, it makes the mind calm and you might just fall asleep, but don't hope for it. And at, you know, especially in the evening, he says if you notice thinking mind, don't look at it. Just stop the thinking mind and just know the awareness. Just go back to being aware of something. And if you keep doing that steadily and consistently, the mind will just settle down. And in the daytime also, keep this steady, continuous awareness going, steadily knowing one thing after the other.
Yeah.
Then the mind is not sort of so active, yeah? So knowing when you're going, knowing when you're sitting, knowing when you're moving, knowing when you're doing things. Just continuously recognize. What do you know when you're walking? What are you aware of when you're walking?
Movement. Mm. Mm.
Mm. Movement. Mm. 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 Mm.
Mm. Mm. Mm. Mm.
And what difference does it make that there is awareness for you? How does it feel different to be aware?
I'm not somewhere else in my thoughts.
The chanya miyami in machine
edition. Oh.
And how does it feel that it's like that?
It feels good.
Mm. And so if you keep recognizing that, just recognizing that often, the mind will keep feeling good. But we need to do this. We need to keep doing this for a long time. At that time, do you have the tension in your head? When it's feeling good? Don't pay attention to the tension. If you are gently being aware of other objects, it's enough. Because when your mind, when the attention goes there, you will feel more resistance towards it. You will feel more dosa, more aversion. Because your mind already doesn't like the tension. Right?
Yeah.
So if you do more of being aware continuously, you will forget the tension and it will go. And probably the most important thing is actually your attitude towards the tension. Yeah, that if you don't have any dislike towards it, that it will be less tense also. Yeah, so just forget to just leave it alone and think of it as nature, another object, and it's. If you do find your attention goes to the tension, and you feel maybe you feel anxious or you feel irritation about it, watch that. Watch the feeling in the mind. The feeling. The mind is not here. The mind is not anywhere. opposite, I could give some sleep to you. Because I sleep sometimes a bit after lunch and like that, and then I think, can I sleep in the night? And then I can sleep in the night, and now I was in the morning session, I was very sleepy. So I was so astonished. What is this?
Finally getting some rest.
I think I have some. I have a bad leg, and then I went up to the mountain yesterday, and I was very pleased. I could do that, and everything okay. So I did something well, but anyway. So then I thought, what shall I do now? Because now I've been good working with my leg, and I think that I might have gone forward. I think I've gone forward and just see more of this small, subtle aggressions and that sort of thing. So perhaps that's why I'm so tired, sort of. Because that was something I achieved, and wow, I was so happy. But then that was done, and I had to do so sort of more difficult stage. I don't know.
Maybe. ก็บอกได้หูเนี่ยดาวหมดแต่ตัวฉันก็ยอมรับสิว่าดูแต่ไหนเนาะดูวันตาเนี่ยวันตาเพราะตัวมาเส้นลงเลยสิว่าสึกกับเปียวตัวเราเนี่ยจี้อ่ะดาแล้วไอ้ล่ะเปียวตัวแน่ๆตัวมันไม่ใช่ดาเลยแน่ๆเพราะว่าสึกกับคอมเพลนนี่ล่ะเนาะตัวไอ้ล่ะจังสึกกับเป็นมันตัวล่ะไม่ติดเว้ยตัวสิ้นซ่าจี้ดาบ่เลยเพิ่นล่ะไม่ติดเว้ยดาเพิ่นไหนเนี่ยบ่เลยอ่าเนี่ยก็มาดิตัวเราลงวันติผมสึกจะผิดไหลนะผิดมันตะดิทาเลยไม่ตัวเนี all this. We don't have to make any conclusions. You just have to continue knowing. If you notice this, you notice this, and then the next thing. And when we know enough, then the mind will understand by itself. And he says, in your case, maybe being active is good. if sitting makes you sleepy,
no,
the mind, if you give the mind work to do, if it's actively being aware, then it will be alert and awake. When the mind works, it's awake. Sometimes people call knowing being awake, right? They call it wakefulness Knowing means we're awake. So if our mindfulness is continuous, it also makes us alert, and we sleep less. We don't feel so we don't feel tired, but we sleep less.
So
just ask the mind, what is it knowing? What is it doing? You can sit with your eyes open also. And you notice seeing and looking? You're aware of seeing and looking?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But in the talking, I hear a little badly, so I can't just take off what you are talking, so that's make me so don't
sleepy. I'm sorry. I think I'm speaking too softly sometimes.
Oh, it's my hearing.
I don't
have an apparatus because it's too good, but still it's too bad. It's like that.
Yeah, sensitive.
I have a question about meditating when walking. Would it be better, because I see that many people have their eyes a little bit like this in the front. But then maybe if you do that, then it's easier, you focus more on the body, the sounds, mm-hmm. whatever. But then if you just are normal, then maybe you can also do that at home, walking in the streets, because you can
walk normally, right, like we would at home. So just walk normally, and it's better that if that you then also recognize that you're seeing or looking, especially because when
only,
you walk with
only,
you can
see, only the meditation object, you see, hearing, see, you seeing, and meditation object.
Yeah, the body is not the only meditation object, right? Or looking, seeing, hearing, and all that are also meditation objects. So just walk like you
usually. So it's okay also if
you
then we can continue to do the same thing at home, right?
So it's also like okay if like to like start looking at something. I mean, if it, there's
I
a butterfly
know.
And you just
yeah,
like
yeah.
you shouldn't try to not.
No, you shouldn't try to not do anything. If
yeah.
you do something, you just know
try
that you
aware.
Did.
Do aware of your kind of appear how look and think like look at how like
he only said to be aware. He didn't say don't do anything else. You know, he just said be aware. So whatever you do, just be aware. And if you don't do it, know that you don't do it. That's all. You do something, you know it. If you don't do something, you know it. You know the choices you make also.
Mm-hmm.
You know. We look all day long. We can't do anything without looking. You know, and we don't recognize that.
Yeah.
We look and do, constantly, constantly. Now we do things, we're like, oh, and we forget that we're looking. You know what happened? It's there. It's so there. He says, do we look because we see? Or we see because we look?
We look because we see.
Yes.
That's the natural way of things. But when we look in order to see, that's greed. It's like greed looking for something that it wants to see. It's closely related to the idea of meditation, you know, that we only can look at what we already see. So when we are trying to be aware, but when, you know, yogis try to see things more clearly, they're looking to try to see, and that's greed. Instead of like, you know, when things are blur, we don't want it to be blur and we try to see more clearly. You know, so but what we see is blur, we should just see, and we can only look at what we see, which is blur, and we can just keep acknowledging that, you know. That's the relationship.
Maybe a few words about I feel that we are so analytical and very kind of systematic and breaking things into pieces.
Uh-huh.
And I guess there is a risk also kind of forget loving kindness and empathy in all these kind of suffering about all our attachments and aversions and all everything so kind of systematic. But how we mix the loving kindness and empathy into this.
Analyze the system,
you know, loving kindness, compassion, joy, and other people's successes, equanimity. All these are qualities that we already have. The reason that they are not present or cannot express themselves is because it's when the mind is full of greed or aversion, or has more greed and aversion. When there's less greed and aversion, the mind automatically feels metta, karuna, mudita, upekkha. So all we have to do is work at So what are we allowing to express themselves in our mind more often? Are we more often irritated, judgmental,
loving kindness?
Or are we full of understanding and love and compassion? What's happening more often in our mind? Whatever expresses itself more often in the mind, that's what will be obvious, that's what will shine brighter. Right?
The opposite, seesaw.
It's like a seesaw, the balance of the wholesome and unwholesome qualities. And the wholesome quality that allows all the other wholesome qualities to be present is sati. Sati must be present for all the other wholesome qualities to manifest. So in meditation, we are allowing, we're opening the path for all the wholesome qualities to be present as much as possible. We're making sure sati is always there. Now when unwholesome qualities are present in the mind, we feed them, we nurture them, we look after them, you know, almost in the in disguise, you know, they almost seem to be positive, you know, so we welcome them. We think that when we have a judgment about what's negative, that we are being positive, but we're still being negative, so things like that. We need to be alert. So that's why we have to meditate all the time, or be aware all the time, because then that being aware all the time strengthens the allowing, or the opportunity for the positive to keep flowering in the mind. Then the negative will have less opportunity to be present. It's like a man for ninjas.
What?
American Ninja. Look at the balls of both.
Okay.
One question. You mentioned about the mind, what it knows. What does that mean?
What it knows?
Yeah.
In context, can you tell me?
Yeah, I mean. Because you said we should look for what the mind is doing and knowing.
Or knowing, yeah. Okay, now he says now. He just said. He says,
do you have a mind?
Yeah, I hope so.
Hope so means you don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
What kind of mind you know? You can say what is the mind, how this is a mind. You can say something, show me.
Yes, my thoughts and my perception.
Right. Thought is your thought is a mind, right? Mm-hmm. Do you know your thought?
Sometimes I know them.
Know the mind. Know the mind. You can know the mind. Thought is a mind.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you can know the thought, means you can know the mind. Anything else? Only thoughts. And then other things. What do you notice?
Right now?
Yeah, right now.
You?
Not me.
What do you know about
yourself?
What do you know? You can't know him.
Okay.
You
that's
can know.
No, I don't know him, but
no.
I know.
You can experience. You can experience your seeing.
Yeah.
Not me. You can know you are seeing.
Yeah.
Right. Including the seeing and exist and me. You can think about me. Actually, you are seeing.
Hmm.
You can know you are seeing. This is a can know.
The direct experience is the only thing you know. Everything else you have to think about.
Hmm.
Okay, so your direct experience is your the function that your body is able to manifest, and for you that's seeing.
Yeah. So when you say or talk about what we know, it's actually what we can
experience.
Yes,
yeah.
So
oh,
the
vision, right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah, pay attention, then you have touching, right?
Yeah,
now
yes.
You have touching.
Yeah, yeah.
Why you know this touching?
maybe because I think about it right now, maybe
pay attention.
Yeah.
The mind can know this.
And
touching,
you can
right?
feel it, right?
Mm? Yeah.
Feeling is something that you can experience directly. You don't have to think about your hand.
No.
Right?
That's what I think you'll do. Yeah. Pay attention, think you'll do.
He said sometimes, yeah, some people think.
In some material, you are thinking a little bit.
Yeah.
You are doing a little bit.
Yeah.
So thinking is a little bit. Pay attention to
things. Yeah, there was someone in Germany who felt that when she thought about something, that's what she was experiencing. But she said that, you know, that's how she used the language, you know, not being too familiar with it. But that was fine, so long as that was what she experienced.
Mm.
But you know, getting the difference between knowing the feeling, what you can know is the sensations, or the fact that you're paying attention. You can know that. Yeah, but
there can't be an ambush about it. Do you watch look?
Oh, meow. Not how much.
There was one person who couldn't understand
when the teachers, you know, we used to always say, watch your thoughts, and he couldn't get it. He was like, how can you watch your thoughts? No wonder he said to him, can you hear yourself thinking? He's like, yeah, and he said, there, that's it. You know, whatever word works for you, if you hear your thoughts, you know the mind is thinking, yeah. Because we all think of words in different ways. You know, words represent, even the same word can have slightly different flavor for all of us. So.
Yes? I have a question about time and space. It's a big question maybe, but...
Wow.
I
got that job.
If I give you the context, like sometimes time is like very slow and sometimes it's like
very good,
relative.
It's too fast.
It's all perception.
It's
our relative perception. When we're interested, time passes so fast. When things are dull and boring, time seems to take forever. When we're watching a pot boil, it never boils. When you're cooking.
Yeah, it feels like
But that's really our imagination. It's not an accurate perception of time. It's our relative perception, our feeling about that's an interpretation of what we feel that gives us that experience of fast or slow.
Mm. Sometimes when I'm like in here in retreat, trying to meditate or walking or just being, sometimes the time feels very slow and I'm bored and I'm dull and I'm irritated and then sometimes I get awareness and then like time disappears completely and there's only space and I'm there and it just opens up and time doesn't make any sense.
So it's just our interpretation of our experience based on the quality of the mind at that time, right? The state of mind that changes our perception of our experience of time.
And when there's like equanimity, I think it's sort of like
when there's equanimity,
then there's there's like no time. Time doesn't exist in a sense.
Because you're not thinking about it anymore. You're not waiting for time to pass.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why it feels like it's not there. It's there. Time just ticks by.
Yeah.
But you're not thinking about it. You're not like, when is it going to finish? You know? Yeah, don't worry. Upakapita kama, change mashira the loga. Because you've forgotten to think about time. So that's when it feels
like
But when we want something to finish quickly, then we constantly think of time. And then it feels like it's a long time.
Mm. And it's the other way around also, like in social situations or where there's hard work, I often get anxious because I feel like I have to like be fast and I have to say something now, because if I don't say it now, I lose my like chance to speak. And it's like the other way around, that the time is like erasing me from behind and trying to like... And my space is like very small, and it gets smaller all the time as the time passes by.
Yeah.
And in those situations too, sometimes I find some sort of equanimity, and then it just disappears, and then I'm just there, and I have all the time in the world, and it doesn't matter like anymore.
Yeah.
And there's only space and infinite possibilities, and and I, these two are just like very interesting.
But
something to achieve for, and maybe I'm clinging too much to them, but...
But you see
like
that it's... Do you see that it's related to your state of mind?
Yeah, of course.
So our task is only to learn how to keep that quality of mind, you know, that that good quality of mind always present. When the quality of the mind is good, time is always enough. So many of our experiences are dependent actually on the way our mind is, you know, feeling or working or thinking, that we're not aware of, and we it's really important to be when we begin to discover the way the mind is working, what it, you know, the judgments it makes, the ideas it has, the beliefs it holds, almost like, you know, like believing that we have to hurry or our delusions are so strong that sometimes we have beliefs, and then we believe that our beliefs are valid. We strongly believe, you know, it's
the mind thing, what do you want to think? Next mind, believe this mind.
It's sort of like the fear of ghosts. When we can't see ghosts, you know, it's dark, we're afraid there might be something there. And because we believe it, that's why we have so much fear. Right? That's a subtle belief in the mind that we don't see. He said like the reality is we don't really know what's there. We don't really know, but the mind can't even grasp that, because the belief that there might be something there is so strong, the heart is already like pounding, right? So when we can't see the total truth, the mind is always like that. It conjures up something it thinks it might be. And then it believes it. And then it will keep replaying that over and over in its mind. But if you turn on the light and you saw the broom or the cat or whatever, then you know that's what it is, and you don't have fear anymore. Right?
mana dia ada tu apa malah mesti dia tu buat cari lalu lagi. Tapi nafsi ada jauh ni.
You notice how we see people we've never met before, and we have subtle judgments about. We've already made up our minds what this person is probably like, and we believe it.
Like I'm involved.
We start relating to the people with our perceptions of them, our beliefs. Yeah, we haven't given the person a chance yet. So sometimes we believe, oh, they must be wonderful. And sometimes we just get irritated by their face or something. It just, you know, then we are reacting off of our beliefs. It's nothing to do with that poor person. Yeah.
Delusion at work. And then you have to just watch these perceptions and.
You have to recognize
them.
It doesn't necessarily mean it stops, but if we recognize them, we are not ruled by them. We don't have to believe them. You know, we can have some discernment.
Nothing to say?
No, it's good.
Okay. Okay, so next time. Try again.